The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hi everyone, Jake Willers here. I'd just like to apologize for the lack of content over the last couple of months. As many of you may be aware, I broke my leg while filming elk at the beginning of March, and I now have a nice shiny titanium rod through my lower leg to show for it. This has set me back somewhat, but I'm happy now to be getting things back on track with this episode. Also, I just wanted to let you know about our new Patreon page, where if you enjoy the show and want to help keep it going, you can donate towards the expenses. Yes, unfortunately, there are expenses creating the show and getting it distributed, so anything you can give would be greatly appreciated. And we're working on some rewards for the donors, so please check it out at patreon.com/Jake Willers. That's Patreon, patreon.com/Jake Willers. Jake Willers, JakeWillers. So without further ado, let's get on with this month's episode. You're listening to the Master Wildlife Filmmaking Podcast, episode 16. Alex Jones is one of the few blue-chip wildlife cinematographers based in Southern California. Alex is a four-time nominee and Panda Award winner of the world-renowned Wild Screen Film Festival in the UK and the Wild and Scenic Film Festival in Nevada City in the USA. Alex specializes in topside animal behavior and macro wildlife cinematography. He's worked on multiple TV shows, films, and commercials in Los Angeles as director of photography, and in addition, Alex produces his own blue-chip wildlife films. His client list includes the BBC Natural History Unit, Nat Geo Wild, National Geographic Channel, Discovery, BBC Earth, and the Curiosity Stream. Alex is a skilled wildlife cinematographer with an adventurous spirit, an inquisitive mind, and a passion for cinematic wildlife content. Alex, thanks so much for taking your time out of your day at the Jackson Hole Wildlife Film Festival to spend some time on the podcast. How's it going for you? What are you here for at the film festival?
Honestly, I'm here to get together with old friends and meet new people. What's really important to me is making my name in the industry, which is, you know, macro filmmaking and long lens work. And honestly, this is probably one of the top best film festivals ever. Everyone's so cool and willing to talk to anyone. So it's really a great film festival. I'm having an awesome time.
It's so nice when you come to, this is actually my first year here. I've been meaning to come for 10 years. And it is, I mean, this and Wild Screen are the two paramount wildlife film festivals. But it's like, even just the first time and being here and meeting lots of old friends, but even the new people you meet, it's just like a big family.
Right.
I was saying to Chris Morgan, who I was talking to earlier, he was talking about how excited he gets when he picks up bear scat. And I said, there's only a few groups of people in the world you could talk to about picking up bear scat.
It's really funny because I was just in a meeting about 2 hours ago, and in the middle of the meeting, I stopped and said, "Oh my God, look at this!" And it was basically a wasp larva inside the plant, and I thought it was like, so cool. And we were both looking at it in the middle of this meeting, you know. I thought it was really funny.
Fantastic. Well, but this is the type of group of people you can do that with.
Exactly.
Right? You can just stop a meeting and say, "Hey, look at this!"
And
this
everyone
is cool.
Is so like-minded, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone's trying to do the exact same thing, whether it's, you know, conservation or high-end, you know, blue chip. Or whatever that is, we're all looking to get the best quality. We're all artists and filmmakers, storytellers, and also love the natural world. And I think that, you know, that this is why we're all here.
So. Now let's talk a bit about a film that I first got to know you online through a film you did called The Prey, about a praying mantis. Tell me a bit about how that came about. You know, what was your inspiration for doing that? And then where did that film lead you to?
So The Prey is really weird because it actually formed off of one shot idea that I had. I honestly was just, I came back from Wild Screen 2014 and I thought of this praying mantis shot that I thought would be really cool. It just wouldn't get out of my head, which was a 16 millimeter wide shot, pushing in and going into a 100 millimeter macro shot, and figuring out how to do that. And I was racking my brain over.
That's hard.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. And I figured it out. And you know what's interesting is I always say the same thing with wildlife. You're kind of subjected to their behavior, right? With insects, anything that you can dream up, you can make happen. That's what's so cool. And even if it's on a set or like a studio or something like that, no one really cares because everyone kind of is already in such a different universe already, right? So as far as the prey goes, I really was thinking about this shot. And eventually I storyboarded it out, and then I started thinking about another interesting shot and another interesting shot until eventually it became the movie that you know now. Obviously, it took a lot more preparation than what I'm saying, but the initial idea of it was just based off of a shot. And I actually made it for Wild Screen for 2016 because I really wanted people to see what I can do, how hard I can push my limits, and how I can make a cinematic movie. And that's what that's what I love, is making really high end, big, epic stuff. Just like really gets to my heart.
Well, and it's phenomenal. I mean, you did a great job with it. You're using high end gear.
Yeah.
You're using great moves. You're telling a story visually.
Yeah.
Which is what it's all about. And you're good at doing that.
Thank
so
you.
What was the reaction to it at Wild Screen?
Yeah, people liked it a lot. I think every time I speak to someone about The Prey, they always have a reaction of, wow, that's very different, you know? I've never gotten a negative reaction from it, so that's a good thing.
That's always a good thing.
And I plan on improving that, you know? It's obviously not completely perfect in by any means, but it's a step to get to even bigger plans for the future. You know.
You're a man after my own heart with, focusing on insects. That's mm-hmm. how I got my start in the industry.
Yeah, we're both bug people.
Absolutely, yeah. And there's, I find nothing greater than trying to, show people why insects are so fascinating and why mm-hmm. they're so important to the ecology of the earth. You know, that's really important stuff. So
right.
Why is that a focus for you?
So I just wanted to stop you almost because the instant I start thinking about it.
I can see you welling up.
Yeah. The instant I start thinking about it, I just get so excited. So I love movies, right? Like 1980s movies are my favorite. Like Indiana Jones, Goonies, all that kind of stuff. Jurassic Park, right? And when you watch a movie, you get so involved into this different world. And with insects, it's like, it's the same thing. You know, you're going into a different alien world. And everything is so dramatic. I mean, even a blade of grass is like as tall as a tree for a beetle or something like that. And just like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, you know, your backyard is a complete jungle. And I love that. I completely love that. I constantly think about that and how different and alien their world is.
I love the fact you're so unbelievably passionate about that because what you've done is you've found.
So I don't mean to be like too much, but
no,
I
absolutely
really get
no,
into
it's fantastic,
it.
Right? Because you've found a niche that you that inspires you so much to really think about it like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you have sleepless nights, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, laying there thinking about how you're going to make a shot and how you're going to imitate kind of a movie scene, but with insects to inspire people, and that's phenomenal. So. What is your primary focus now in terms of filmmaking? And I've seen you're doing a lot of social media. You're doing stuff on camera, kind of hosting stuff in the moment, with your cell phone, posting that to social media. Where's your focus?
My focus, honestly, is not really hosting. My focus is creating blue chip wildlife documentaries, whether it's insects or mammals, birds and stuff. So that's what I'm doing, is really trying to build my business and expand it. And keep making bigger blue chip stuff. My ultimate goal is to really be making high-end stuff for television, and hopefully even eventually for movie theaters. But I know that's a different space as well. But I just want to make sure that in my five-year plan from now or something, I'm creating, producing, and shooting high-end blue chip stuff that people just go wow to. That's my point.
Well, that's great because you've got an absolute specific goal in mind, mm-hmm. and you're heading towards that, and you're doing
constantly thinking about it every day.
Right,
every
and day. So you're positioning yourself and coming to the festivals, going to Wild Screen, doing stuff like that. That's where it's happening.
Yeah,
these are the people you've got to meet. This is the advice I give people all the time: mm-hmm. come here, go to the International Wildlife Film Festival, Wild Screen, any of the wildlife film festivals. That's where you're going to network and find
right.
the people. So, a big question that people yes. always ask me is: how are you funding what you're doing? Do you self-fund it? Are you looking to get money in to do your work?
It depends on the situation. So, you know, at the end of the day, this is all a business, and you have to make money unless you just want it to be a passion thing. Even though it's passion, you need to make money. So, depending on the situation, you can put your money into a film and go through acquisitions and, you know, meaning get it sold to a network or whatever. That's a good way to go. A lot of people do that. But what I do is get the shows commissioned. I have one show that I got acquired from CuriosityStream. It was The Prey. But most of the time, you know, I'm really concentrating on getting shows commissioned because, you know, it really makes your life easier to do that.
Well, and it's, you know, it should be said that, you know, when you have a passion and, you know, as intense as yours is, you know, where you want to do this stuff, really, you know, we have to put ourselves out. We have to spend a lot of time, our own effort making
right,
this stuff.
Right.
Because, I've met people in the past that sadly think that because they're interested and they come to somewhere like this, someone's just going to give them a job.
Right.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
It just doesn't work like that. You have to put yourself out. And it'll probably take you years of doing a lot of hard work and spending a lot of your own money before you get recognized or even, you know, if you ever get recognized, right?
And what's important, too, is to always have that goal, you know. Have a goal to set, know it, and refine it, and keep shooting for it. You know, I'm sure you felt the same way at one point where I think every wildlife filmmaker felt this way at one point where before they're actually working in the industry, they are trying so hard because everyone tries really hard, you know, and then you go through a lot of these downtimes, right? And sometimes you just feel like whatever you're doing just is not working. So, you know, am I right for the industry? Does the industry even want me? You know, and am I actually doing the right thing? Am I being stupid? You know,
we've all been there. We've all been there.
So, you know, I think what helped me really was to taking control over your own life and being smart about how to sustain yourself, your motivation, as well as your wallet, you know.
You know, it's interesting you say that because, you know, I actually do a lot of different things based on, you know, the ebb and flow of the work.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only do I do the wildlife side of things, but I also work for a lot of the news networks.
Yeah.
And so I'll work for Vice on HBO and I'll go and do a day's work for them and that'll bring in money that then helps me move forward with passion projects.
Right.
And so I think it's really important to mm-hmm. know that there's ways of doing that.
Yes.
And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to go and wait tables or do something that's so far removed.
No.
You can just find creative ways of doing what you love
exactly.
and earning money from it.
Right.
And
everything that you do, if you really, really are passionate about this and you really want to get in this industry, you got to work on this 24 hours a day, every day. You got to wake up, breathe it, and, you know, you go to sleep thinking about it. And it will come, you know. It happens as long as you are smart about it.
Well, and I think those hard times are there, you know, doesn't matter what industry you're in,
mm-hmm.
those hard times are there to really weed out the people who really have the passion. Mm. Because if everyone,
I wouldn't say weed out, I would say build people up, you know, because weed out is kind of a negative way to say it, because everyone has the ability to do what they want to do. They just need to put their ass in gear.
Right. They've got to have enough drive and enough passion to see it through.
And, you know, look, these people who are here, whether it's a volunteer or someone that's higher up in the industry, you know, they're all passionate about that. Otherwise, they wouldn't be here, you know. So it's not like, you know, I wouldn't say weeding out. I would say really building up, because everyone is trying to do something and something that they're passionate about and they want their voice to be heard.
Absolutely. So let's talk a bit about your gear.
Sure.
I know you have a RED camera, and I think you're on the upgrade path with the RED cameras.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
So talk first of all a bit, like when you started, what did you have, and where are you now?
So when I started, I had, like when I first started completely, I had the DVX-100A. That was when I, with tape, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then after that, I went to the HPX-170. Then I went to a 60D, which is actually the camera that I used to shoot Elephant Seals, California's Coast, which got an award at Panda Award.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Thanks. And then I went from a DSLR, jumped up to RED, to the Scarlett. And you know what's funny? I wasn't actually a fan of the Scarlett. It just didn't look that amazing to me. So I decided to go up to the Epic. And that's what changed the game. I've had that camera for about almost the whole run for the Epics. And I wasn't going to upgrade to the Helium, but I did, you know, and now I'm super excited. It's because 8K on insects, woof.
Yeah, it's going to be incredible. You can punch in there. You've suddenly got yourself another macro on top of the macro you're using, right?
I did some tests online, right? I took an R3D off of RED site. And if you're listening, you could do the same really easily. Put it into Premiere or Final Cut. Scale that puppy up to 400%, and you still can't see any pixelation.
Wow.
Or noise.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That's
400%.
Incredible. Yep.
And it's still sharp and beautiful. So that means with macro, you can get like 3 shots in one, right?
Absolutely.
Especially,
yeah, yeah.
You know, even if you're moving too, you can get all these kinds of angles. So it's pretty exciting stuff.
It's going to do a lot. So in terms of lenses you're putting on there for your macro lens, what are you using?
For the macro stuff,
yep.
I'm using the 100mm L-series Canon. I'm also using the 65 MPE.
Great lens, one of the diehard macro lenses.
Yep. It's actually only for macro. I also use extension tubes. Also, something that I'm a really big fan of is wide-angle macro. So what I did was I took a GoPro and I broke the lens to be able to get wide-angle macro shots. And it's actually a lot easier said than you think it might be, breaking a GoPro.
Right.
But
better that than the Epic.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, and if you're a macro person, all you have to do is take some type of spacer and put it in between the sensor and a wide-angle lens. And the farther out you push the wide-angle lens, the more wide-angle macro you can get. It only goes so much, though, because then you're going to be focusing on dust inside the glass or something. But if you do it just right, you can actually get some really interesting wide-angle macro stuff.
Fantastic. So is it MacGyvering a macro?
Yeah, macro is all MacGyvering.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, wildlife filmmaking is all MacGyvering.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's what interests me so much is that being out and doing professional work and seeing other professionals in the field, mm-hmm. you always need that roll of tape.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That roll of tape to strap something on
exactly.
the camera.
Exactly. Duct tape or gaff tape.
Or gaffer tape.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I actually use duct tape a lot.
Right. It's cheaper. It's a lot cheaper.
Yeah, and it's stronger, but you know, they both have their advantages.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, what are you doing now? Have you got any ideas for? Are you working on films at the moment?
Yeah.
Are you looking to do more in the future? What's happening?
Right. So right now, I'm working on 2 shows that I've got commissioned. One on insects for Curiosity Stream, and the other, you know, I don't know when this is going to come out, but I just don't really want to talk about it right now. But because it just happened and all that stuff. So, second one is pretty big, epic stuff, not on insects. And so that's what I'm working on for the next year, basically. But what's interesting is, you know, I'm going to be busy for the next year, and I am in the middle of it right now. I'm still looking for ways to get something for the following years, you know. I have a few ideas that I think are going to be really cool. And I'm also talking with some people here at Jackson Hole about projects that they're working on, like features and stuff. So that's pretty cool.
Well, you know, what's interesting about this industry is that even the pros, the guys who are at the top who have kind of made it, they're regulars filming for National Geographic, the BBC, mm-hmm. even those guys are searching for work year in, year out. You know, mm-hmm. it's not one of those industries where it's just rolling in.
Yeah.
You know, you still have to be coming to these events and networking and meeting your clients and you know, making deals, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's not a 9-to-5 job, that's for sure.
Right, right.
You know, like a 9-to-5 job, what you do is you have these steps that you take. So you go in for the work, you do the work. 2 years down the line, you get bumped up to something else that's, you know, paid more, right? Here, what you put in is what you get out, you know. Well, not all the time.
Sometimes you could put a lot in.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
But that's really the reason behind networking. This
right.
is, you know, you can put a lot in mm-hmm. and be one of the best filmmakers there is in the world, mm-hmm. but unless you go and meet the right people, nothing's going to happen.
Exactly.
That's the reality of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why, you know, places like this are incredible. I mean, you know, you get the chance. I met a guy the other day. We did a podcast episode, Patrick Dykstra.
Okay.
He's a fantastic guy. You know, he went, followed his passion, jumped in the water with blue whales. The BBC saw it. They contacted him. His clips are now in Planet Earth 2.
Awesome.
That guy had never done any broadcast stuff
wow.
before in his life.
That's incredible.
And so and now he's working with them.
Great.
And that all happened within less than a 2-year period.
Wow.
So it just shows the power of what can happen when you know, you're meeting the right people and putting
yeah.
yourself out there.
Definitely. That is so cool. I want to meet this guy now.
I'll
want
introduce you to
hear
him.
His story.
Yeah, yeah. He's a great guy. So if you had advice for people wanting to get into working with insects, because that's your primary thing, that's where
yeah.
your passion lies.
Yeah.
What advice are you going to give to people who, you know, maybe can't afford a Red, maybe can't afford Canon L-series lenses because they're expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, where should people start? Because you can find an insect wherever you are. I don't care where you live. Maybe not if you live in Antarctica.
Yeah.
But what advice have you got for them?
I know it sounds like really cliche, but honestly, if you have a camera, just shoot it. I mean, there are so many ways. Okay, so here's a tip. If you really want to get into macro, then you can take a DSLR. And, you know, you can even get a cheap DSLR. They sell DSLRs for like $200 on eBay. So get a DSLR, get a kit lens, and reverse the lens. So the front of the glass is actually facing the sensor. And that's a good way to actually start macro work. But again, if you're really interested in macro, you got to MacGyver stuff and, you know, figure that out. If you have a camera, go and shoot. That's the whole point of why we're in this industry. So, you know, even an iPhone. They had some iPhone classes at WildScreen. Do you remember that? There was some iPhone wildlife filmmaking classes.
I don't. I wasn't there, but I can
yeah.
imagine. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to say that you can make a blue chip off of it, but, you know, there's always a way to shoot something. And well, that's what's really important. You got to keep shooting.
And Hollywood movies have been filmed on an iPhone. iPhone 6, that film Tangerine came out. There was a cinema-released film.
Oh, I did hear about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's possible. And the thing is, it always comes back to this thing that it's about story and content.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I was talking to someone else about this the other day. If you capture behavior, mm-hmm. animal behavior on camera, it really doesn't matter to some degree what the camera is. If it's unique behavior, then broadcasters will want it.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know what's interesting, too, is the audience is very forgiving with picture. Okay. When it comes to sound, the audience really is not forgiving at all. So that's why when you see movies that have GoPros or, you know, iPhones and stuff, a lot of times you say, wow, because they've put a lot of emphasis on the sound design, you know, and made sure that the sound quality was good. So I would also say, if you have a crappy camera or if you just want to make the quality of your films better, make sure you get that sound in there. And I'm talking about every sound. If there's a burrowing owl and it's running along the floor, yeah, you're not going to get that sound on location, but do it in post. Get that Foley in there, you know, and really make the audience feel like they're a part of the world.
That's a very, very important advice right there, because mm-hmm. it's so true.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people skip out on that.
They do. And I think this is one of the things with buying cameras, right? People mm-hmm. get this gear envy thing. They go out and they buy a camera they see someone else using. Mm-hmm. They start filming and they wonder why their stuff isn't up to par.
Yeah.
And it's because they didn't buy a microphone and
yeah.
they're using the in-camera mic.
Right.
Or
they didn't film in first light.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So
yeah.
Now, speaking of light, how important is light?
Oh my God, it's the most important.
To macro filmmaking.
Well, light to macro is actually the most important because it requires a lot of light. You need to stop your f-stop down to like f-16, f-20 even, which is really dark. And you know, even if you have extension tubes on, you're losing 2 or 3 or 4 stops of light. So you need a crap ton of light. I mean, I'm talking a lot. And on top of that, you don't just need a lot of light to light the thing. You need to make it look pretty. A lot of heavy backlighting and stuff. So it's extremely important to me. If you want high quality stuff, yeah, lighting's, I mean, light is always on my mind. While I'm sitting here talking to you, I'm looking at the harsh light coming down and hitting the side of your face, and the shadow on the right side of your face. And this is the kind of mindset that I think every cinematographer has, you know.
Absolutely.
You have to have a really strong desire to love light.
Well, I think anyone knows who's ever taken a picture that if you stand in the wrong way to the light and you take a picture with a phone or a camera, it can just look terrible or it can look great.
Yeah, but iPhone, and for some reason, whenever you take a phone portrait on an iPhone, for at least for me, I can never take a good shot.
Right.
No matter
how, even stick to the macro photography.
Yeah, I'll just do that.
So, no, I mean, it's really important. I think that's another reason why it's so good to do it in a studio setting. And because that way you can manipulate the light. If you're outside, one of the biggest issues I found, obviously, if you're using sunlight, is once you get in close enough with those lenses, a lot of the time you're blocking the sun out.
Exactly. You're causing shadows and stuff. Mm-hmm.
So it's so important. I used to actually have one of the first theaters. I called it Bug Theater, and I built it, and it was used in our first series, Insects from Hell, on National Geographic.
Awesome.
And I built it just out of plywood, painted it blackboard black with blackboard paint, and we filled it with soil and all the things we needed to make it look rainforesty, and that's what we used.
Yeah.
And of course, as we were saying earlier, that's acceptable with insects. You know, I don't think it's a big deal, but
well, the reason why is because of the sun shifting, also because of the wind. Wind is always a huge problem with macro. You know, you have a little bit of breeze and it can completely destroy the shot. When you're that tight on an insect, moving the camera at 1-to-1 ratio, even 5-to-1, if you move the camera 2 millimeters, you completely re-orchestrated the composition of the shot. So it's very precise. But studio work is actually, I'm sure you know, studio work is an art form in itself. You know, it takes a lot of patience.
Absolutely. And I see you have a tattoo.
Yeah.
That says patience on your arm, on your inner forearm.
Uh-huh.
And I can only imagine that's there because you do macro photography.
Actually, you might think it's a little weird, but it's fine. I actually got it because I'm so passionate about wildlife filmmaking. And it means, for some reason, I don't even know why this is, but for some reason that word means wildlife filmmaking to me. I don't know why, but
well,
that's
because
how
it because most of the time it takes a huge amount of patience.
It does.
To do.
Yeah.
And I think, well, you know, we're seeing different things nowadays. You know, there's lots of reality-based shows. And I think, you know, certainly we were being pushed there with a lot of the stuff that we were doing to make cheaper shows.
Yeah.
And those shows are run and gun. They're bang, here's something, look at this, it's great, move on.
To do it.
You know, yeah. And so, yeah. And so, you know, patience got left behind with that. But to make real wildlife, blue chip, certainly, wildlife shows, it takes a lot of patience. You only have to go and talk to some of the guys who have sat for months in a hide, you know, waiting to film snow leopards to find that out.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you're making some stuff for Curiosity Stream. How do you go about, if someone wants to, if they've got the gear, they're filming stuff and they're making some great content, how do they go about getting deals with people like Curiosity Stream or maybe
how would I go about doing that?
Yeah, how would you do it? What advice would you give to people who maybe want to do that?
I just approach them. I just approached them and I said, I have an idea and I think, you know, I would really like to see what you guys think about it. That's pretty much it.
And that was before you had filmed anything? It was just your idea and they were interested?
Yes, but I mean, look, you can't go up to someone and say, hey, I have an idea. What do you think? Can you give me money? It's not like that. You have to really plan out a budget, plan out the concept and put that on paper, make it look really pretty and get their interest. I mean, if they're going to invest money into your project and build a relationship with you, you got to give them something in the first place. You can't just assume that they're going to give you something so you can go do what you want, you know? So it's really about building a relationship. It's not, you know, so you really have to put a lot of work and effort into a pitch before you pitch it.
And of course it gets easier once you've actually had work out there and people can see the quality of your work. And I think it goes without saying that, you know, quality, if you're looking to get that kind of work, do the best you can.
Yes.
Don't cut corners. That's the whole patience thing again, right? If you rush stuff and it goes wrong, no one wants to see that, right? If you're trying to sell stuff. It's
every
important.
Single time, no matter what it is, whether it's for my company or if I'm working for Nat Geo, for example, what will happen is I put so much effort into it that it becomes physically and mentally draining. And I get to the point where it really runs your life. You know, you really got to put 1,000%, even if it's not your show. It still kind of is, because if you're a camera person, your ideas are being put into that sequence, and you want to make sure you're making the best out of yourself. You know, if you just slack off a little bit and be like, oh, I got the job, so I can just, you know, I'll do shoot this shot here and go get a beer afterwards. It doesn't work like that, you know.
That's right.
But I'm sure everyone would agree with me.
Absolutely.
Know?
I don't
I don't know anyone who would actually say, oh, well, I disagree. I think that's dumb. You know, I don't know.
No, I think it goes without saying again that most people in this industry put in far more time for the money they're paid.
Yeah.
Than, you know, really, if you were to tier the money you get paid from a contract down to an hourly rate,
yeah,
you're probably getting paid a minimum wage there at some point.
Yeah,
with the amount of time you've put in. Mm-hmm. And I think
whether it catches up with you or what.
That's,
you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, hopefully it catches up with you. Right?
Yeah.
And you get to a point. But it's a passion industry.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. And there's, you know, there's a level you can get to and you can earn a good living. But again, it's one of those things where you've got to keep the momentum. Mm-hmm. Keep the momentum.
And also, too, I think what's really important is, I don't know, some people, everyone's very different, right? But some people are just okay with how life is in the moment. But for me, I'm never really like that. I've always got to be doing more. When I'm going to be making my TV shows in the future, I'm going to be wanting to do bigger TV shows and stuff that really gets people going, you know? And eventually when I do my movies for theaters, I'm going to want to do something even bigger, you know? And it's just never going to stop. But that's the drive that makes me tick.
Fantastic. So social media, mm-hmm. You, how important is social media for you? Keeping an audience?
Pretty important. I mean, it's such a big deal to have a big following nowadays. I'm not good at it at all. I don't know a lick about it. And I try, but it's just not my world, you know? But it is very important.
Well, I think we're finding that here. There's been a lot of panels talking about social media because of the type of industry we are, and we're so passionate about getting, you know, our creativity put in the places where it needs to be and how it has been in the past.
Yeah.
That it's kind of like, okay, here's this, we're suddenly getting tripped up. We need to catch up here.
Yeah.
And so even the biggies like BBC are now pulling that into their marketing campaigns bigger shows.
Sorry to cut you off, but also the all of these companies are really thinking heavy on social media. And I mean, Nat Geo Wild right now, you know how big they're booming right now on the internet?
It's incredible. It's hundreds of millions.
It's insane. And good on them, because, you know, they figured it out, you know, and people have been trying to figure out social media for a long time and get proper budgets for it. And they've figured it out.
Well, which is great. And they, you know, of course they have a big team, you know, they've got a lot of people working on that.
Yeah.
And that's possible. But when you're on your own and you're starting out, it's a case of trying to incorporate it. I mean, we're all struggling with that. I struggle with
that.
Yeah,
of course.
Chris Morgan, who I was talking to earlier, he's struggling with that, you know, and it's one of those things now.
That's why what you got to do is you got to have someone else do it for you.
That's right. You're right.
And then
you
don't have to worry about it.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, awesome. One last thing. If you're going to give any more advice, right, another piece of advice, just in general about getting into the industry, for anyone trying to, you know, is just not quite there and they're like, okay, I want to do this, but it's a struggle, what should they do?
I think if I was going to give any advice for wildlife filmmaking is, again, keeping that patience there, keeping that the passion there. And if you're good at what you do and you completely believe in it, 100%, then it will come. Refine the craft, and it will get frustrating a lot of times, but that's just the journey to be successful. I'm not successful yet. I'm not saying that, but it does take a lot of fails to look back on and refine from there and keep going. Because eventually something will happen if you're passionate enough. There's no... If you're really passionate about what you want to do, then there doesn't make any sense in the universe for it to not work out for you. if that makes sense.
Totally. And I think it's failures are one of the greatest learning experiences, right? If you didn't fail, you wouldn't be the steep learning curve there, or the exponential curve that happens after failure. Because yeah. Once you plod on and you persevere, then those things can be the greatest things to move you forward.
So. Well, there are actually a lot of very successful people. I don't know what's his name. Tony Robbins?
Tony Robbins, yeah.
So with Tony Robbins' story is right before he hit success, he took about a year off of his life because he was like really far down. And for some reason, even Stephen Hawking was the same way, I believe Stephen Hawking. For some reason, right before someone hits success, they go through a huge low and nothing seems to be working out. And if you keep going after that, if you keep going on something, then it shoots up. And that's exactly what happens to everyone who has changed the world, who has become successful in what they want to do. I thought that was a pretty cool story that Tony Robbins had.
Absolutely. And I think it's part of building momentum. Yeah. You build that momentum and you build and it gets tiring and you get worn out and you get frustrated. Right. And then you have a big down because you're just like, why isn't this working? Yeah. But what happens is all that work and effort that you've put in comes back and starts paying off in dividends.
Right. And then you got to keep maintaining it.
And then you got to maintain it. That's right. You can't stop there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And Tony Robbins is a great example because obviously look at the work, look at the effort he puts in now just to keep building his brand and inspiring people. Right. Yeah. Well, Alex, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure to have you on here and great advice. And, keep making those macro films because it's a real nice niche area. And I think, that's going to take you far.
Sure. Thank you. I hope I was enough, but I don't really think I can give that much advice just because I'm still trying to go somewhere myself. But
but that's what this is all about, and it's about people, the people at the top, and it's about people who are working in and getting through and doing the day-to-day grind to make something of themselves. Yeah. And you're inspiring others because you're doing that and you're putting films out there and you're trying different avenues to make it work. Yeah. And it is working. And the more you do, the better it's going to get. So all the best in the future.
All right. All right.
Thanks, man.
Appreciate it.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Master Wildlife Filmmaking Podcast, then please leave a rating and a comment. And remember to subscribe to keep up to date with the series. You can find out more information on wildlife filmmaking at masterwildlifefilmmaking.com, where you'll find valuable free resources like downloadable reports and video tutorials. Thanks for listening.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.